The reason there's been a proliferation of superheroes, in the last 60, 70 years came about in the way that it came about is because, here's where your parents, when you go and tell them, will write letters to the president of the university. God is dead. Because God is dead. Now, y'all are from Texas, I think, most of you, so you know pretty well that there are a lot of people out there who would disagree with that statement. There are probably some people in here who would disagree with that statement. Who said that, Ben? You know? Yeah. Huh? You have no idea? Who knows? Who's famous for saying God is dead? David? Nietzsche. The same guy whose work gave us literally the word Superman or Übermensch, Overman. What does he mean when he says God is dead?
Well, my very limited knowledge of Nietzsche.
You know what? The overwhelming majority of people who talk about and write about Nietzsche have a very limited knowledge of Nietzsche. So let's go on ahead with that.
I would probably say.
Ah. That's okay. That's what most people do when they talk about Nietzsche.
I was going to say that he means that humanity has come to a place intellectually where there's just not a need for a God or a superior being that
actually
capable of thinking in a moral sense without needing it from some higher power.
Okay. Hold on one second. Let's just find that and look at it real quick. It's from a text called The Gay Science, or The Joyful Science, The Science of Joy. And let me switch it over so y'all can read along. Y'all can follow along in the hymnal like any good person would. Have you not heard of that madman who, little lantern in the bright morning hours, ran to the marketplace and cried incessantly, "I seek God, I seek God." As many of those who did not believe in God were standing around just then, he provoked much laughter. "Has he got lost?" asked one. "Did he lose his way like a child?" asked another. "Or is he hiding? Is he afraid of us? Has he gone on a voyage, immigrated?" Thus they yelled and laughed. The madman jumped into their midst and pierced them with his eyes. "Whither is God?" he cried. "I will tell you, we have killed him, you and I. All of us are his murderers, but how did we do this? How could we drink up the sea? Who gave us the sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What were we doing when we unchained this earth from its sun? Whither is it moving now? Whither are we moving? Away from all suns? Are we not plunging continually? Backward, sideward, forward, in all directions? Is there still any up or down? Are we not starving as through an infinite nothing? Straying as through an infinite nothing? Do we not feel the breath of empty space? Has it not become colder? Is not night continually closing in on us? Do we not need to light lanterns in the morning? Do we hear nothing as yet of the noise of the grave diggers who are burying God? Do we smell nothing as yet of the divine decomposition? God's to decompose. God is dead. God remains dead, and we have killed him. How shall we comfort ourselves, the murderers of all murderers? What was holiest and mightiest of all that the world has yet owned has bled to death under our knives. Who will wipe this blood off us? What water is there for us to clean ourselves? What festivals of atonement? What sacred games shall we have to invent? Is not the greatness of this deed too great for us? Must we ourselves not become gods simply to appear worthy of it? There has never been a greater deed, and whoever is born after us for the sake of this deed, he will belong to a higher history than all history hitherto. Here the madman fell silent and looked again at his listeners, and they too were silent and stared at him in astonishment. At last he threw his lantern on the ground and it broke into pieces and went out. "I have come too early," he said then. "My time is not yet. This tremendous event is still on its way, still wandering. It has not yet reached the ears of men. Lightning and thunder require time. The light of the stars requires time. Deeds, though done, require time to be seen and heard. This deed is still more distant from them than most distant stars, and yet they have done it themselves. It has been related further that on the same day the madman forced his way into several churches and there struck up his Requiem Aeternum Deo. Led out and called to account, he is said always to have replied with nothing but, "What, after all, are these churches now, if they are not the tombs and the sepulchres of God?" Well, what do we think of that? There's actually two movies out now called God is Dead and God is Not Dead and God is Not Dead Too. This was written 130-something years ago. What do we think about that? What's the basic premise? Basic premise.
Ourselves not become God simply.
Okay. Okay. And what is it that we've done? Look what we've done, right? Y'all. Some of y'all probably think that my talking about beliefs and taking things for granted and trying to understand what you take for granted is, you know, useless talk in a certain sense. But there, you know, this is actually what we're talking about. What did we believe before the Copernican Revolution? And that the earth was the center of the world, center of the universe, right? And that it was a very small universe. It had earth and the planets and the sun and the moon and the stars, which were basically just backdrop. Okay. So what does he mean then when he says, all of us are murderers, but how did we do this? How could we drink up the sea? Who gave us the sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What's that? What's that mean? Who gave us the sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? Is the horizon not still there? Do you not have a horizon? Connor, was there no horizon this morning when you were driving to work? I guess it's a job. When you were driving to school?
I don't know.
No, you don't know? Where were you driving toward?
I would say that wipe away all the old.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like what were before. If you stop and you actually look at what it is that he's doing there, he's saying, look, used to, we didn't think there was anything beyond the horizon. So he had a very parochial viewpoint, right? The world was as far as you could see in any direction. Right? As far as you can see in any direction, technically, is the horizon. Right? Because at the horizon, you can't see past, right? And then for a lot of people, the idea of drinking up to sea, for a lot of people, well, they extended the horizon because they started wandering around and then they started going off on the oceans, right? But it was still the case that we thought the world was a very contained, small spot, right? That's the reason why Columbus and Amerigo Vespucci and other people thought that you could just sail westward and you'd end up at, I mean, you can to a certain extent. You just sail westward and you'd end up at China and India, right? But they thought that it was a smaller world. Then they discovered America. That not only increased the ocean size, it also increased the horizon and increased the size of the world. Who gave us the sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What were we doing when we unchained the earth from its sun? What the hell does that mean? Unchain the earth from its sun. What does that mean? We unchain the earth from its sun. Yeah. Well, actually, we used to believe the earth was the center of the universe, right? And then so the sun was our sun, right? And the sun centered, it circled around us. It was chained to us, right? This also recalls the notion of the great chain of being, okay? God, humanity, everything else. I think God, humanity, angels, everything else. Whither is it moving now? So the sun's been unchained from us. Where is it moving from? Because, see, used to, here was the earth, and here was the sun, which was smaller than us, because, you know, it looks smaller, doesn't it? And it was chained to us, and it was revolving around us. In fact, because of the way we'd drawn the horizons, we thought the earth was flat. The sun was going around us and then going beneath us and then coming back up. Yeah, Ben?
I don't think that the statement God is dead necessarily means a literal God. I don't think it means like an actual deity. I think more literally it's pointed at Christianity, where all of the theories and all of the beliefs on science that stem from Christianity, like this, mm-hmm.
Right.
It being debunked. It's not real, it's not realistic. So the idea of Christian scientist ideas being debunked, that means that the Christian reach into the science community is being kind of lost.
Right.
So the statement the point gets across when you read God, people say God's dead.
Yeah, the aphorism actually, because it's an aphorism, it has a lot of different meanings. You've gotten to one of the meanings, and one of the meanings is that our belief system, our cosmology that comes out of the westernized Judeo-Christian belief system, the Abrahamic belief system, has had its influences on how we view the world, right? So a minute ago when I said there's some of y'all who think that a lot of this is kind of hooey, I suppose, but of course the motion is that this was a belief. And this was a belief, right? Because remember I told you that Copernicus even said that the earth might, you know, he gave us a heliocentric universe, but he said that everything moved in perfect circles, which was why they still couldn't get things to jibe correctly, right? Then, you know, when Nietzsche says this then, he's saying that our belief systems at some point become, which are horizons, right? They're what we inhabit, and they're our horizons, or what we demarcate the world with. They become uninhabitable. New ideas replace them, and new beliefs come about. And in the process of doing this, this notion of God that had that has had the opportunity to just sort of keep leapfrogging along with these ideas, we've reached a point where we've killed God. Who gave us the sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What were we doing when we unchained this earth from its sun? Whither is it moving now? Whither are we moving away from all suns? See, in each of these, we can account for how we're moving. Right? But now look at this. Here, in the heliocentric, the sun was still the still center of the universe, the earth going around it. But now we know what? That the sun, well, let's put it here. The sun is itself related to the center of the galaxy, and it's moving around in some kind of crazy fashion, right? We can't fully understand, right? And we're in the middle not of a completely ordered system in which everything is in perfect relation. We're actually in a void. Have you ever asked yourself why fish don't swim upside down or sideways? You're like, what are you talking about? I'm talking about the fact, why don't fish, when you get into the ocean, where they don't have any of this kind of bullcrap to deal with, because they're in the water, how come they haven't evolved to swim in whichever direction? This is where smart is supposed to say, because God made them that way. What? Do what?
They have like a
it keeps them upright and everything, right? Yeah, at the same time, once you get out into space, isn't it all just willy-nilly whatever? I mean, you know, you get into space, you don't know. You see this in really nice science fiction movies, even some sci-fi, you know, what do you call them, science operas or science westerns like Star Trek. You'll see them when they're filming at one point, like this new Star. Who saw Star Trek Beyond? Yeah, y'all remember that they had the artificial gravity? And so when you were looking at different levels, people were walking upside down, right? Because that's kind of what's really going on now anyway on the Earth. It just everybody's so far apart you can't see it. But you sort of like just stick in any direction, and it's like, but you know, there still has to be some kind of center of gravity. There has to be some kind of center. Up until a century or so ago, God was always this in Abrahamic religion. God was always the center of everything. And even when you go into any of the other religions that we've studied, the divine is always the origin and the goal and the center. Right? Yeah. Fizz, did you have your hand up? Okay. So let's go on a little farther. Backward, sideward, forward, in all directions. Is there still any up or down? Are we not starving? Straying. I keep wanting to say starving. I wonder why that is. I'm not hungry. Are we not straying as through an infinite nothing? There's nothing outside. Literally. There's nothing outside. Do we not feel the breath of empty space? Do you realize that this word space, just like teenager, only came up to be utilized, you know, this notion, teenager was pretty much invented by advertisers, but the notion of space, this idea of space, it just meant between here and there until 150, 200 years ago. Now, it means the deep void, right? Outer space. Nothing. Do we not feel the breath of empty space? Has it not become colder? Is not night continually closing in on us? Right? There's no... In space, nobody can hear you scream, and there's no light. Right? Do we not need to light lanterns in the morning? Of course, he's carrying around a lantern, right? Do we hear nothing as yet of the noise of the grave diggers who are burying God? Do we smell nothing as yet of the divine composition? So he's up there. He says, I seek God, I seek God. Can't find him because we killed him, right? With all of these different things that we've done. And as you say, it's not necessarily that we've killed the real divine, the authentic divine, but we certainly have killed and should admit that we've killed our presuppositions and our notions about what the divine is. Some people don't want to admit that. This all comes back around then to this question. Why do we have so many superheroes in the last 80 years? 70, 80 years. Why do we have all these comic books, all these stories, all these comic books? It's because there's still this sort of schizophrenia inside of our society, I want to say. It's because there's still this sort of schizophrenia inside of our society that we have not gotten, we haven't thought through what our relationship to the divine might be, so we're still straddled with these notions of the divine that in some cases are actually literally flat earth ideas of God. They're the kind of ideas that people had of God when we thought the earth was flat. These ideas are all piled on top of each other. Nobody goes through and examines these notions. And in the process, what we end up doing is we end up creating for ourselves ideal types . It's extremely important as we kind of think about, you know, everything that y'all have done this semester. It's all present in this popular fiction of comic books and superheroes. We still want someone who's more powerful than us, in the sense of truly godly more powerful than us, right? Originally, Superman started out as just some dude who was kind of strong, who could leap so far, it was like he flew. Right? And he was, because he had such big muscles and he was so strong, he was really fast. Over time, as time went by, we got a Superman that's literally a god. Right? Which is, of course, what they've dealt with in a number of different comic books, and they're slightly dealing with Justice League and in Batman versus Superman. But it was already laid out. It was already laid out in the first Superman movie that came out. What was that, 4 years ago or 3 years ago? It is absolutely no surprise that movie, which got not great reviews for good reasons sometimes, has a philosophical core to it that's actually quite revealing of what it is we're seeking. In that movie, you are offered two choices of Superman. I was saying that everybody always butchers Nietzsche. The Nazis butchered Nietzsche pretty badly. In fact, his sister, who was a Nazi, literally did not allow anything that he wrote that would contradict Nazi propaganda to be seen by anybody. Right? She edited stuff and wouldn't let people see anything in which he criticized anti-Semitism, or he criticized the idea of the pure German race, or he criticized all that stuff. She hid it. She worshipped him too much to destroy it, but she hid it. So there was this butchered idea of a Superman. Well, in that Superman movie, right, you're given the choice of the butchered Nietzschean idea of Superman, which is Zod, and the Platonic Superman, which is what Jesus Christ is. Pretty much how Jesus Christ is structured, the Platonic Superman, which is Clark Kent, Kyle L. And it's even there in the film. They make allusions to critiques of Nietzsche. And as a teenager, Clark Kent is reading Plato. Because we want somebody who's super powerful that has our ideas. So we need this ideal type. And you can look up, I've thought about this a little bit, but not as deeply as I should have after a while. You can look up on my website, you can look up something called the Platonic Superman. But at any rate, so there's that. But we also are cool with the idea that we want somebody who demonstrates what human beings are able to achieve. So we have in Superman an actual sort of God character. And then that would be like Superman and Wonder Woman. But then we have other characters who represent what human beings are able to achieve. And oddly enough, over the course of the last 20 years, we've made that particular character someone whose origins are connected to studying Shaolin Chinese Kung Fu and utilizing his fabulous wealth and his wonderful mind to solve crimes and battle crimes. And that would be Batman. So we want an idea of a god, an idea of the trained person, which is Batman, being the bat. And these things, just like the fact that there's been one other thing that's occurred in the last 80 years. The rise of conspiracy theories. This cavalcade of overlaid notions of the divine that have never been fully questioned by the majority of people, so that they're all kind of moving around inside of their presuppositions and what they take for granted, and they've got a hodgepodge of beliefs that are often mutually exclusive, with little or no real examination because their pastor told them not to be critical thinkers, or their parents told them that they shouldn't question, or whatever. That over the course of this time as well, if God is dead, we need somebody who's watching everything we do. And somebody who's making things happen. And what's ended up happening, of course, is since there is no God that's doing that, since all we have left are human beings, and we all know how crappy human beings are, what we end up with are these very intricate theories of conspiracy that our governments are being controlled by. Jews, by people, you know, Islamic extremists who are undermining, that Trump is actually a plant of Hillary Clinton in order to throw the Republican side of the race, that dot, 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 as though the entirety of all human activity can be conspired against by 60 or 70 old fat men that are bankers that go and hang out with each other once a year at a forest outside of San Francisco. That the Vatican is controlling everything through the Jewish banks. There's an irony. Right? These are the kind of things. You look at that, and it's directly connected to this. Nietzsche actually has pinpointed the fact that we have a lot of conflicting ideas, and every time we move forward without actually thinking about those ideas, we just kind of keep moving forward and we keep going pragmatically, right? Because as I think that I've said in here before, human beings primarily are make doers. We make do, right? And because we make do, we don't, in making do, think about what we're making or think about what we're doing. We just make do. Okay? And in making do, we do these kind of things. We have few, if any, objections to most physics now, because nobody wants to not make do with electricity. Everybody's willing to make do with electricity and with engineering and with all of the different kinds of gadgets that we have. So no, and because of that, we just make do with the physics and the engineering that we have, but nobody really knows how it works per se, right? Nobody knows how it really works. So we make do with the physics, we make do with an economic system that nobody really understands. And we just kind of keep flowing along with the way it works. Do you know how your banking system works? How many people in here knew that the Federal Reserve is actually a group of private banks? Bet you have some conspiracy theories. Yeah. So the Federal Reserve is, we control who the governors of the Federal Reserve are, but the Federal Reserve is actually owned by its member banks, which are primarily these huge-ass banks. Yeah. So we have an economic system that we don't completely understand, but we make do. We have a military system, military-industrial complex that nobody in here probably fully understands. I'm not saying that I understand all of these things either. I'm just saying, you know, I'm aware of what I'm making do with. That in itself begins to change what's going on, right? But we have a military-industrial complex that we don't completely understand. The United States of America cannot just simply suddenly pull out of all the places that it's in. I don't like the idea that people who join our military get used like pawns on a regular basis, but the point is that this, which funds our ability to make use of this, is dependent on that. Right? So then what you end up getting is you end up getting with the majority of people. And the reason I want to say that the superheroes and the conspiracy theories are so prevalent and why they become so important, even among people who are Christian or Muslim or Jewish or Hindu or whatever they may be, those ideas become, these things become very popular with them, is because that at our heart, because we're critical reasoners, we actually do understand, we actually do know that there are conflicts in our belief system. And in those conflicts, we know that we've killed God, but we refuse to ask the questions that would allow us to resituate ourselves toward the divine. And so we just fall back on evil conspiracies and gods and heroes because as useless as superheroes are in the grand scheme of things, as useless as conspiracy theories are in the grand scheme of things, they're very useful for making us feel like we haven't lost control. And a Taoist would say, you want to have fun and you want to have these ideas about this and you want to be questioning about how your government is structured, that's good. That's okay. And we should always sort of be thinking about how heaven is ordered or how people can be made better or any of these kind of here. There's nothing wrong with that. That's all right. But a Taoist would say you make use of the useless in a really shitty way, because you don't use the useless to see how often things that are useful are destructive. You don't use it to see that there's nothing evil about this process. It's not a bad process. But when you combat it by saying, I'm going to hold to some of the belief here and some of the belief here and whatever I can make do with over there, and I cobble it all together, You're participating in prohibiting the under heaven. Prohibiting the Tao of man or of humanity, the Tao of humankind, prohibiting the Tao of nature, prohibiting the Tao from flowing. Right? Because you are utilizing the powers of naming things in these ways to keep stuff in control because you don't want to feel insecure. And it's a habit that we get into so quickly that we just go right boom, 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 boom. We don't think twice about it. 95% of you in here have sat in the exact same seat the entire semester because that would actually be making yourself insecure if you didn't. Right? You've got a place. I know my place. Right? Half of you have come to class every day, not because you want to learn, and I'm not casting aspersions on you because we're all products of our position, not because you want to learn, but because you don't want the insecurity of thinking you'll fail. Right? So the Taoist would say when he looks at these kind of things, oh, you're so ready to question. You're making up stories of heroes. And you're coming up with reasons for why the world is screwed up. But then you don't really want to let go and be willing to be uncertain and insecure. You want to keep control to the degree that you can. Right? So you give yourself these tales that you tell yourself, that with a bachelor's degree I'll be able to get a job, that with a job I'll be able to buy a house, or I'll be able to get married. With marriage we'll be able to afford a house. With a house we'll be able to afford kids. With kids we'll be able to, you know, have multiple generations of people after us, and you know they'll help take care of us when we get old. Making do. But not make, see what the making do does is it allows the pre-established useful. It allows the pre-established useful to predetermine who you are and what you'll do. Instead of you, right? What Jesus said, the law was made for humans. Humans were not made for the law. The law was made for humans. Humans were not made for the law. Pre-established usefulness, pre-established functionality binds you in by its definitions, and it makes you serve the usefulness of those things rather than those things being useful serving you, even if you want to be useless. This is a key Taoist idea. The absolute and inherent usefulness of uselessness. This is the point in any semester where I would say philosophy, which I've up until now I have defined as the willingness to be uncertain and the will to ask questions. Right? Philosophy is uselessness. Philosophy is the usefulness of uselessness. Philosophy will always be called useless by people who serve the pre-established structures of usefulness. Okay, take a break and let's come back and actually talk about what we were going to talk about today. And if you come up with any questions or whatever.